Hi, you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with the Arizona Daily Sun for Thursday, February 20th, 2025. I'm Flagstaff volunteer reader Lisa Cantor-Ganey. Our front page stories today include County Working to Understand Impacts of Cuts, Hundreds Protest Outside City Hall, Students Take Lessons from Nature, and SUPS Continue Public Hearing for Zone Change Near Valley Airport. We're going to begin with our first story at the top of the page, and it is titled, As Federal Workforce Cuts Begin, Coconino County Working to Learn More of the Impact. And this is written by Cody Bashore, digital editor. With the exact number of federal workers who have been terminated by the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, via executive order, a mystery to those within the various agencies, Coconino County also remains in the dark. For Coconino County Manager Andy Bertelson, updates have come in a variety of ways, be it through traditional means of news media, such as the Arizona Daily Sun, or social media sources. Very little, however, has been made clear from the source of the cuts themselves, whether that be specific positions eliminated or a total number at each of the county's federal partners. Certainly, the informal communication channels are helpful, Bertelson said. I think there are mixed messages and confusion created throughout the entirety of all the systems. Noting that he was aware of a county employee whose son had received a termination letter, Bertelson said, all those stories become very real very quickly, as the closeness of the community has led to county leadership hearing some of the stories firsthand. Coconino County's boundaries contain a significant percentage of federal lands, leading to close working relationships and friendships between the federal workforce and county leadership. While Grand Canyon National Park, Glen Canyon National Recreation Area, Coconino National Forest, and Kaibab National Forest stand out as the most significant federal lands in Coconino County, smaller portions of Prescott National Forest, Apache Sitgreaves National Forests, as well as multiple national monuments, are located among the more than 18,000 square miles in the county. Through the U.S. Forest Service and the National Park Service are naturally the most prevalent, Coconino County's workforce extends to other federal agencies, such as the Environmental Protection Agency, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the U.S. Geological Survey, USGS. Notably, the USGS has been responsible for the Cinder Lake's Apollo Training Area and assisting in the Cinder Lake Capacity Study for the Schultz Fire Flood Mitigation efforts. It's anxiety-inducing, Bertelson said. It's stress-inducing, because you're talking about the economic segment of our community of people that are employed here to support the services provided by the National Park System, the National Forest, and all of the amenities. Many of Bertelson's concerns, and of Coconino County's leadership as a whole, come from the significant fire season ahead that is anticipated as northern Arizona's dry winter continues. As of February 18th, Flagstaff specifically is 49.9 inches, oh my gosh, behind its normal snowfall with just a trace amount of snow depth and 3.31 inches behind the normal precipitation since October 1st. Though the county remains in constant contact with Coconino National Forest Supervisor Aaron Mayville, Bertelsen acknowledged the future is now somewhat unknown and it's out of our control. We all know how we've been impacted by natural disasters, fires, and post-wildfire flooding, Bertelsen said. If we don't have firefighters, if we don't have employees with the ability throughout the West to help fight these fires, who is going to be there to help protect our communities? That's a major concern that we have right now. Thinking through the potential for disastrous scenarios is unfortunately the realistic approach for Coconino County at this point in the winter season, as Bertelsen expressed a need to be accepting the current reality. Bertelsen added that the county is also still unsure of the status of future federal grants that are being pursued, or what may become of plans for federal funding to assist with water conveyance on Highway 89, road improvements to Perkinsville Road, and many other services provided by Coconino County's various departments. The significant cost of post-wildfire flood mitigation has been alleviated by federal and state partnerships, as Siri Mullaney, the county's chief financial officer, detailed during the January 28th Board of Supervisors meeting. The county's approximately $76 million in federal funding for fiscal year 2025 is a bit higher than the average year due to the efforts of the Flood Control District, Mullaney explained at the meeting, which came on the same day President Donald Trump began his pursuit of a freeze of federal funding. I think the Forest Service has done a really great job of managing those controlled burns. The Flagstaff Watershed Protection Program that was bonded many years ago, I believe, has proven to be successful and help to protect our local communities. The Bill Williams Mountain Project has been super helpful for Williams, Bertelsen said. You look at some of those efforts, and can they continue in this current funding federal landscape? I don't know. Possibly not. And that's concerning. And the article was titled, As Federal Workforce Cuts Begin, Coconino County Working to Learn More of the Impact. Our next article on the front page is titled, Hundreds Rally in Flagstaff in Support of Federal Workers, Public Lands, and in Opposition to Trump, Musk, by Sam McLaughlin, Sun Staff Reporter. Hundreds of people gathered at Flagstaff City Hall on Monday to protest President Donald Trump and Elon Musk's sweeping cuts to the federal workforce, which are impacting the U.S. Forest Service and the National Park Service across northern Arizona. Though emphasizing public lands and the employees who manage them, the protest also served as an opportunity for people to voice their dissatisfaction with Musk's unprecedented role in the new administration and in running the new Department of Government Efficiency, and Trump's sweeping uses of executive power in the first weeks of his term. Some carried signs that read, No Kings on President's Day, a shared slogan for protests throughout the United States. The protesters lined Route 66 from the corner of Humphrey Street almost all the way to Sitgreave Street. Children and dogs played behind the lines of sign and flag waving demonstrators, and passing cars sounded a nearly continuous chorus of horns in support. But despite the show of unity and resistance, federal workers in attendance say they're feeling sad, demoralized, and frightened. Across the U.S., federal agencies have started terminating thousands of probationary employees who are newer in their specific roles and have fewer job protections. These firings, which began with enticements to resign or retire and a freeze on new hiring, are part of a multi-pronged attempt to drastically reduce the size of the federal government's workforce. The Coconino National Forest fired about 16 probationary employees last week, and Grand Canyon National Park cut at least 10, according to current employees present at the protest. Precise numbers of terminations are difficult to obtain as of press time. Workers from multiple agencies said they didn't know how many people had been fired beyond their immediate colleagues. One noted that even their supervisor doesn't have a concrete list of whom had been or might be terminated. Supposedly that's coming, they added. I don't know anyone who really knows the full extent of the people who have been lost yet, another person said. The majority of people interviewed for this article requested anonymity because of fear of reprisals and/or agency restrictions on external communications. The probationary level can be misleading, one current National Park Service NPS employee pointed out. Federal employees often switch agencies or positions numerous times throughout their careers, particularly if they work in seasonal roles. And someone in a probationary period for a new position may be, in fact, highly experienced. It's not just people who are getting started. It's people who have really committed a lot of their life to this, that employee said. When those people are abruptly fired, the agencies lose significant practical knowledge and expertise accumulated over the years. The workers also lose their livelihoods. Another NPS worker said, "Most people in our division are really passionate about the work that they do, and it's not just a job, it's a lifestyle." They were incredibly devastated by the firings, they said. I spoke to my boss's boss, and we were talking about next steps, but also sobbing on the phone together. Nicole Allen, the regional vice president for the National Federation of Federal Employees, NFFE, said 3,400 probationary employees had been fired nationwide by the Forest Service. If you're going to be fired on probationary period, it still needs to be for performance or conduct reasons, Allen said. Terminated employees had received generic notices of unsatisfactory performance without specific details or explanations, she said. Our union is working on a number of legal actions to stop what is currently happening and make it right for those employees, she added. The mass terminations, she said, are unprecedented. And although the firings have been confined to probationary employees thus far, because they're an easy target, Allen said, she's concerned that more terminations could be coming, with even greater consequences for the region's forests and parks. We have an incredible public lands system here, she said, and that could really cease to exist. Fears over fire season. Fear around wildfire preparedness and wildland firefighting was a major theme of the protest. Public safety positions, including firefighting jobs and law enforcement roles, are supposed to be exempt from both the mass layoffs and the executive order freezing federal hiring. But that isn't how it's playing out in reality, according to some of the demonstrators. Even if they are exempt, there's enough confusion that I know firsthand that it's impacted people's ability to hire, a former federal firefighter said. Delays or uncertainty around the hiring process could drastically impact who gets hired and their ability to be operationally effective this summer, they added. Logan, an NFFE member who asked to use only his first name, said, "They said there would be a public safety exemption, and I haven't seen that. I see it firsthand," he continued. "I've spoken to some of the guys who are also NFFE members. They don't know if they're going to be able to staff a fire engine when we should have 3 or 4. Understaffing or delayed hiring could also affect agencies' ability to carry out preventative fire management strategies, such as prescribed burns or fuels reduction. That could lead to more destructive fires, an NPS employee pointed out. It's just a downward spiral. Multiple people pointed out that many Forest Service employees who are not employed full-time as firefighters nevertheless obtain certification as a wildland firefighter, receiving their incident qualification card, or red card, and serve as a backup or auxiliary firefighting force in emergencies, expanding the agency's capacity when it's most needed. "Whether you have firefighter in your job description or not, we all help," Logan said. "We're all red carded. We help with forest closures. We put out fires. We do fire prevention patrols. Without that, I don't know what Flagstaff looks like." This year's dry winter has heightened fears of a particularly bad fire season for Flagstaff. The uncertain prospect of a diminished wildland firefighting capacity is further amplifying that fear. Chip, a former Forest Service employee and wildland firefighter for over 30 years who attended the February 17th protest, wearing his old fire jacket and helmet and carrying a large American flag, said he was expecting a big fire year in 2025. "If we don't have any firefighters this summer, it's going to be a pretty ugly fire season," he said. "If they're going to cripple the Forest Service by all this expletive," he added, "neighborhoods, towns, all kinds of stuff's going to burn up." A recent employee of the Coconino National Forest said, "God forbid a fire happens and they leave it to the privatized groups." Although private contractors often assist government agencies with large wildfires, those companies aren't anywhere close to being a replacement for the federal workforce, the employee said. They are not prepared for that kind of action. A blow to the knee. Besides the looming fear of a wildfire, attendees described other consequences for agencies, employees, and employees' families. We'll see how it goes, said a former Coconino National Forest employee. "Hope and pray, but for the most part, it's going to have a negative effect on everything. Bathrooms aren't going to get cleaned. Campsites aren't going to get taken care of." Another protester said cuts to the Science and Resource Management Division of Grand Canyon National Park could impact the ongoing replacement of the Trans Canyon pipeline that supplies drinking water for the South Rim. "The pipeline project requires environmental mitigation work," they said. "But the division responsible for that work had been slashed to just 2 or 3 people. Contract funds for Conservation Corps projects had also been frozen," they noted. "We're already understaffed. Losing people is kind of like a blow to the knee. It's crippling," another Grand Canyon employee said. "We also lost a dispatcher and we lost people from the fee booths as well," a third Grand Canyon employee said. They added, "The lines this President's Day weekend have been insane, all the way to Tucson. Now it's going to be even worse." The Parks Dispatch Center serves other NPS units across the region: Montezuma Castle National Monument, Tuzegut National Monument, Montezuma's Well, Tonto National Monument, Petroglyph National Monument, and Pecos National Historical Park. It also provides dispatch services for the town of Tucson and parts of Coconino County. "If you have an emergency, you might not get help fast enough," the employee said. "These are dark times." And an employee of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency said the firings were going to have a huge impact on the way we conduct their work, our work. "We, more than anything, want to focus on our work and be able to clean up toxic sites that pose a health risk to the environment and to people and communities that live near them," they said. "Right now, we're worried about our jobs instead. We're worried about our colleagues that are being laid off. We're worried about the futures of our positions and what work we're going to be able to do." One person who works for the U.S. Department of Agriculture stressed that federal projects often involve multiple partners, from cities to counties to individual farmers or ranchers. "A bunch of our projects are no longer functional without our probationary employees, and our funding has been frozen as well," they said. "The downstream effects on all those project partners remains to be seen. For seasonal workers, the hiring freeze has meant retracted job offers and the sudden elimination of a once viable career path. You have these people who worked seasonal jobs for a long time, and they finally got the opportunity to get into a permanent position," a current federal firefighter said. "And I'm sure that they started buying houses and making bigger decisions like that. I know people who bought houses based off of jobs they got, and now the jobs are gone," a longtime seasonal employee said, who's worked for multiple federal agencies. "People have just had their lives uprooted and ruined. It just sucks." They said they'd spent years putting in a bunch of seasonal time to build a career, just in time for it all to be taken over, and didn't know what to do next. "I'm just seeing how it shakes out," they said. "At this point, I don't even want to work for the federal government if this is what it represents." Another seasonal employee who'd most recently worked for the Forest Service said, "I'm going to try to find a job back in the food industry probably, or maybe on the river, but it's not certain." A current employee said her seasonal colleagues don't know what they're going to do. They're looking all over the place. "One," she said, "might start substitute teaching. There's not great prospects." "I have a backup plan and it's working out for me," one attendee noted. "But for the rest of the crew, I can't say. I'm just worried and praying for them that they get through this." "I know people who have lost sleep and who don't eat over this," he added. "They say that there is a lot of work in the private industry, but I don't see it." DOGE disapprobation. Beyond their concerns for their colleagues and the lands they've stewarded, many attendees were fearful, angry, and sad about the way Trump has granted sweeping decision-making authority to Musk's pseudo-governmental DOGE. "Nobody voted for Elon. Nobody has confirmed Elon to any sort of position. The Constitution is very clear about how these powers are supposed to be delegated. It's just unconstitutional," one attendee and former federal employee said. I don't care what they have to say or think about it, it's unconstitutional. The cooperation of agency administrators with DOGE demands was frustrating, they said. I understand that people are scared, and I understand that people are fearing for their jobs and their livelihoods. But it's disappointing, and it's disappointing that Congress isn't doing anything. It just feels like all the guardrails are gone. Demonstrators said Musk and Trump's rhetoric around efficiency was unfounded and disingenuous. Honestly, as a government employee, I can see that there are a lot of ways we could make the government more efficient, and we should be looking at that, one NPS employee said. But in order to do that, you have to really look at it and surgically remove things. What we've seen so far is this shotgun approach. Mass firings, they said, have nothing to do with a strategic plan of making the government more efficient. Instead, they see it as removing people at random to break the system deliberately. The overall effect, one person said, was hugely demoralizing. It's scary. It feels just sort of surreal, too, they added. An employee of the U.S. Geological Survey, another federal agency with a presence in Flagstaff said, speaking personally, the general chaos and general confusion makes it to where doing your job is like you either bury your head in the sand or you subject yourself to anxiety. I think a lot of people are still grappling with what the long-term effects of this are going to be, NFFE Representative Allen said. Another federal employee said, simply, I think it will be a rough the next 4 years. A handful of demonstrators struck a more determined tone in the face of the political upheaval of the past month. We are resolute. We miss our counterparts. We miss the camaraderie, but we are committed to our mission, and we'll do our best to fulfill it no matter what, an employee of the United States Department of Agriculture said. The public, they said, should know that we are your next-door neighbors, and the services we are providing benefit all of us, our communities, from the bottom up, from watershed protection to flood mitigation to wildfire management to crop production. We are here to serve. Former Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez attended the protest and said, it's great to see folks coming out and expressing their displeasure with the current president on President's Day. Nez noted that tribal communities like the Navajo Nation have a special relationship with the federal government, and that funding freezes and staffing cuts also had significant potential to affect indigenous communities and their lands. Dollars come directly from the federal government to tribes. Now, many of the grants and the federal appropriations are being held in Washington, D.C., he said. They're playing mind games with a lot of folks and family throughout the country, Nez continued. There's a lot of trauma. There's a lot of anger. He appreciated the civil character of the protest, he said. We are showing that we need to hold our congressmen accountable. Eli Crane should be out here supporting these families, he added. Crane is the U.S. representative for Arizona's 2nd Congressional District, which includes most of northern Arizona and the reservations of multiple tribes. For at least one attendee, the protest brought a small measure of optimism. I've kind of lost, well, hope, said Nancy Ryan, who carried a handwritten sign reading, Save Our Forests. The political turmoil since the inauguration just started becoming overwhelming, she said. And when I saw this, I thought, it just feels good, she added. Public lands are, I think, the epitome of the United States, and I have spent so many days in national forests, and I love them. Seeing the crowd gather to show support for public lands and federal employees, and hearing the honks from passing cars, I feel hopeful, Ryan said. And the title of that article was Hundreds Rally in Flagstaff in Support of Federal Workers, Public Lands, and in Opposition to Trump, Musk. Now we're moving on to our third front page story. This one is titled Coconino Board of Supervisors Continues Public Hearing for Zone Change Near Valley Airport. And this is written by Cody Bashore, digital editor. Though the redevelopment of the Grand Canyon Motel and its surrounding area in Valley received a unanimous recommendation for approval by the Planning and Zoning Commission, potential approval by the Coconino County Board of Supervisors will be on hold for a month. Prior to the opening of a public hearing to discuss the zone change request scheduled for last Tuesday's Board of Supervisors meeting, District 1 Supervisor and Board Vice Chair Patrice Horstman requested a continuance following an objection and petition by Valley residents. According to Horstman, putting the public hearing on hold until March 18th from its originally scheduled date of February 11th would allow for the county's community development and legal teams to review whether the board has the ability to delay zoning decisions until an area plan is developed. Horstman, whose district includes Valley, explained that residents raised concerns about the lack of an updated area plan as the county considers rezoning the 5.76-acre parcel of land where the Grand Canyon Motel stands from general to commercial general. Grand Canyon Hospitality, LLC, is seeking the zone change to remodel and expand the current motel, which stands as a legal non-conforming structure on the parcel, and develop a 50-space RV park on the site located immediately northeast of the Valley Airport. They're concerned about zoning changes without having an area plan in place, Horstman said. The Valley area plan currently was done in 1999. We were hopeful we were going to get it done before the comprehensive plan for the county started. Obviously, we weren't able to, so the area plan for Valley has been on hold until the county completes its comprehensive plan. Horstman continued on, acknowledging an area plan for Valley would likely take 2.5 or 3 years at best. The continuance, Horstman suggested, would also allow for county staff to review how commercial general CG zoning came to be on the adjacent properties to the east across State Route 64, where Grand Canyon Hospitality LLC's Grand Canyon Inn Restaurant and Lounge all stand. I understand the concerns of the petitioners, but I also understand the concerns that the applicants would have in order to wait to utilize their property consistent with the CG zoning, which is the zoning that those across the street, right across the street from them, currently enjoy. Horstman's motion for the continuance was seconded by District 2 Supervisor Geronimo Vasquez and unanimously approved by all 5 supervisors, as it met the requirement for public notice requirements. Planning and zoning initially approved the recommendation for the rezoning, as well as a conditional use permit, CUP, for the RV park contingent on the board approval for the zone change, in a unanimous vote from its 7 commissioners during the December 4th meeting. Since the process began in March 2024, county staff received 16 comments and a petition signed by 21 people in support of the project, while another 7 comments opposed the plan. Those in support highlighted the aesthetic improvement the project would bring to the area, as well as possible economic benefits, and those objecting had concerns about the density of the plan and issues with the proximity to the airport. While a CUP for the property was approved in 1973 to allow for overnight travel trailers, an office, groceries, a curio shop, and a land sales office, a gas station, and a 15-room motel were added between 1978 and 1979. Another 13 additional rooms were added to the motel in 1985, with all uses besides the 28-room motel abandoned in the early 1990s. The renovations include the 28-room motel remaining, while a storage building on the property is remodeled for another 5 units that would be intended for long-term workforce housing to help the community. The 50-unit RV park with park models for short-term rentals would be located behind the hotel on the western side of the property, with a new well and an alternative wastewater system to be added in order to support the property's additional units. Conditions for the CUP's approval included a waiver for the landscape buffer that's required when a commercial property is adjacent to residentially zoned properties, a waiver to allow for the historic sign at the front of the property to be replaced or refurbished, and a 6-foot-tall fence around the property to prevent trespassing onto airport property. Letters of opposition sent to the county highlight the potential for increased trespassing onto the airport's runways and taxiways, as well as the potential for increased foreign object debris onto a property that is only 28 feet away from the taxiway. According to a letter signed by Norm Gobel and Jessica Boyce of the Valley Airport, if a zoning change is approved and an additional 50 to 100 people are in such close proximity to the airport, it will allow for more trash and flying objects to get into propellers and props of aircraft that are landing or taking off at the airport, the letter, dated November 25, 2024, read. This could cause airplane accidents and other safety issues that need to be considered for the safety of everyone. And that article was called Coconino Board of Supervisors Continues Public Hearing for Zone Change Near Valley Airport. Okay, so our last front page article is titled, Students Take Lessons from Nature. Haven Montessori starts outdoor education program. And this is written by Abigail Kessler, Sun staff reporter. Haven Montessori recently started an outdoor education program for its elementary students with lessons that ask kids to explore the local natural environment. The school started the program at the beginning of the spring semester as one of its afternoon special classes. Once a month, each class from the school, from kindergarten to sixth grade, walks to Thorpe Park for a 2-hour themed lesson that incorporates the outdoors. The lesson for each class is adjusted to their grade level, and the walk to the park includes a discussion of the month's topic. The new program is led by Katie Wallace, a PE teacher and classroom assistant at Haven. February's theme is the 5 senses. On Thursday last week, A group of 4th, 5th, and 6th graders led by Kim McGilvra were finding different objects to examine using the prompts I notice, I wonder, and it reminds me of. This was followed by a pairs activity with one student closing their eyes and a partner leading them to a tree that they investigated through senses other than sight. During the first activity, one student had found a fragile piece of wood covered in holes and with pieces flaking off. He observed that it was also lighter than expected and guessed that beetles and woodpeckers had made some of the holes. Fifth grader Opal Smith Crannell said the lesson had been pretty good so far before rejoining the activity. Another fifth grader, Jonah Munson, said people could notice whether a tree had smooth bark or a distinctive smell by learning about it with senses other than sight. "We've been working on trust with other partners," he said of last week's lesson. "We've also been working on our 5 senses, and we've been playing outside. The lessons will take place year-round, except during rain or unusual weather." "It's been really popular with the kids," said Christy Zeller, the school's executive director. "We'd like to build on this as much as we can. We know that the best way to learn about nature is to be in nature." Zeller said Haven has been trying to incorporate the outdoors into its classes more often, as well as in this program, through outdoor lessons, for example. She said she hoped students would gain a sense of calm and order from participating, as well as bring curiosity about the lesson topics home and to other parts of the school. "I know that kids, just by being outside, it can switch a day from being bad to good almost instantly," she said. "And hopefully they're coming home, thinking about how they can appreciate nature. Ultimately, in the Montessori environment, what we're trying to do is spark their excitement and their interest in learning." And the title of that article was "Students Take Lessons from Nature, Haven Montessori Starts Outdoor Education Program." And that was written by Abigail Kessler, Sun staff reporter. So next we're moving along to a local in Arizona page where we have a couple of news briefs to read. The first one is called "New Warrant Issued for Driver in Deadly Lake Mary Road Crash" by Daily Sun staff. A new arrest warrant has been issued for Christopher John Hands, the driver allegedly responsible for a fatal collision on Lake Mary Road in October 2024. Hands, 65, was released from the Coconino County Detention Facility on December 10, 2024, after posting a $500,000 bond. He failed to appear for a scheduled hearing before Coconino County Superior Court Judge Joshua Steinledge on Tuesday, February 18th. He faces charges of second-degree murder, driving under the influence, and failure to stop for a vehicle accident involving a death, all stemming from the October 6, 2024 incident when he allegedly struck and killed a motorcyclist with his truck. According to the Flagstaff Police Department's initial report, Hands did not stop after the collision until another driver forced him to pull over. He reportedly displayed multiple signs of impairment, including incoherent speech, and officers found a vodka bottle and cans of beer inside his vehicle. The motorcyclist, 66-year-old Richard Allen Swenson of Prescott, was pronounced dead at the scene. Hands pleaded not guilty to all charges. After Hands' release from custody in December, pre-trial services staff informed the court that he provided dilute urine samples on two separate occasions in January, but was otherwise complying with all conditions of his supervised release. Coconino County Attorney's Office filed a motion to revoke Hand's release based on the unsatisfactory urinalysis samples. Hand's release conditions were supposed to be addressed at Tuesday's hearing. He is represented in court by Bruce Griffin of the Flagstaff firm Griffin and Stevens. And that brief was called New Warrant Issued for Driver in Deadly Lake Mary Road Crash. Our next news brief on this page is called USPS to Hold Job Fair Friday in Flagstaff. The U.S. Postal Service will host its second Flagstaff Job Fair of the year on Friday, February 21st, seeking to fill immediate job openings for both city and rural carrier assistants. As of last month, USPS had at least 21 vacancies in its carrier workforce in Flagstaff. Staffing shortages have contributed to delivery delays in the area. USPS did not specify how many positions are still open at this time. The job fair will take place at the main post office, 2400 North Postal Boulevard, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. USPS personnel will be present to provide information about open positions, answer questions, and assist potential candidates with the application process. Applicants should bring a driver's license, educational history, and employment history. Starting pay for the currently available positions ranges from $19.33 to $20.38 per hour. Applications may also be submitted online at usps.com/careers. Position listings are updated weekly. We have another news brief here. I thought we were done, but we're not. We got another news brief. It's called Coconino County Black History Month Essay Contest, open to middle school and high school students. The Coconino County African Diaspora Advisory Council, ADAC, announced the annual Black History Month Essay Contest is open to middle school and high school students. The 2025 Black History Month theme is African Americans and Labor, which highlights the impact of Black people's work and how it shapes the experiences of Black people and the societies in which they live. Students will be asked to answer a prompt in a short essay that focuses on their own future job goals and a historical or modern figure from Black history who shares and has excelled in that profession. ADAC will provide a list of various jobs and figures from Black history who have served in those roles that students can choose from as the subject of their essay. A scoring rubric will be provided for teachers to assist them in helping students to write strong essays. The deadline to submit essays is Sunday, February 23rd. Students interested in submitting their essay can download the form at coconino.az.gov/document center. Under the BOS Advisory Councils, or submit directly to Arena Contreras at acontreras@coconino.az.gov. And for more information about ADAC and links to its monthly meetings, visit coconino.az.gov/93/African-Diaspora-Advisory-Council. And that brief was titled Coconino County Black History Month Essay Contest, open to middle school and high school students. Next, we have an obituary on this same page. It's for Liz Gummerman, who passed away peacefully in her sleep on January 27, 2025, after a long battle with chronic pain. Born on June 6, 1958, to her loving parents, Ed and Jean Nelson, Liz was raised in Evanston, Illinois, with her siblings, Eddie, Barb, Dave, Donna, and Jean. She was always happiest surrounded by family. Liz earned her Bachelor of Science degree at Southern Illinois University, majoring in forestry. As a student, she found her way to the American Southwest, where she worked as a surveyor for the Black Mesa Archaeological Project in 1980. That summer, while living in a tent on the Navajo Reservation, she met the love of her life, Wolf. Liz and Wolf were married at her childhood home in Evanston by Wolf's grandfather in 1983, surrounded by family and friends who danced the night away to bluegrass music. Soon after their marriage, they moved to Los Angeles, where Wolf attended graduate school, and Liz began her museum career at UCLA's Grunewald Center for the Graphic Arts and Hammer Museum. In 1989, they had their first child, George, and a few years later moved to Flagstaff, Arizona, where Liz developed a lifelong passion for the Museum of Northern Arizona. Beginning as a volunteer, she worked as a devoted membership manager and volunteer coordinator for 13 years. Again, lifelong friendships were made. Maddie was born in 1995, completing their family. A huge fan of National Public Radio, Liz worked for KNAU as the development director until her chronic pain became too debilitating. In 2020, the family ventured to Telluride, Colorado during Maddie's high school years. When she wasn't making eggs and avocado toast for Maddie, volunteering at the ski area or at the library, you would find Liz scrounging through the free box. Liz was passionate about many things in her life, especially mushroom foraging, skiing, cooking, reading, and documentary films. Liz will always be remembered for her exuberant personality. She was a woman full of joy, passion, and kindness, eager to get to know everyone in the room. We fondly remember her beautiful smile and infectious laugh. Family and friends were everything to her, and she is dearly missed. To honor Liz, donations can be made to the Museum of Northern Arizona or KNAU in her name. A celebration of life will be held on April 19th. Time and location to be determined. And that obituary was for Liz Gummerman. And now we have another article that is under the banner of Community Health Matters. How to give a picky eater a balanced diet. And we'll go ahead and read that. It's by Kirsten Nelson, MSRDN, CSP. Dear Northern Arizona Healthcare, I am the mother of an 8-year-old and he is an extremely picky eater. Everyone has said that all kids are picky and he will just outgrow it, but he hasn't yet. I'm getting concerned as he is getting older because I know how important it is to have a balanced diet. Do you have any tips on how to help our child incorporate more foods into his diet? Signed, Concerned Mom, Flagstaff. Dear Concerned Mom, this is a great question, especially as we are coming up on National Nutrition Month. National Nutrition Month focuses attention on the importance of making informed food choices and developing sound eating and physical activity habits. Your child's picky eating habits are something that many children deal with 25 to 35% of all children will struggle with some type of feeding or growth issue at some time in the first 10 years of life. Research shows only 1/3 to 1/2 of children will outgrow their selective eating within a 2 to 3 year time span. That means a majority of kids will not outgrow their pickiness, and research shows these kids are often fussy for a good reason. Some of the reasons could include lacking oral motor skills, difficulties swallowing liquids, sensory challenges that trigger them, other symptoms or conditions that make eating uncomfortable. You may want to seek out a professional if your child struggles with aversion to food or food textures and groups, transitioning from pureed to table foods or mealtime challenges. Northern Arizona Healthcare's Children's Health Center has a network of providers who enable patients to receive multiple specialized services. From our therapy providers to our specialty clinics, the Children's Health Center is able to coordinate comprehensive care for most specialty needs in our pediatric population. These services include a feeding team of trained professionals who can evaluate your child's eating and make a plan to help them broaden their preferred foods. Some of our providers that could help devise a plan for your child include speech-language therapists, occupational therapists, registered dietitians, and social workers. We also like to refer to the Sequential Oral Sensity, SOS, approach to feeding, which is based in systematic desensitization when looking at children who are finicky eaters. Children who appear to us as picky eaters often have a stress response when offered new foods. This feeding therapy strategy approach encourages them to explore at smaller levels of interaction, first tolerating it on their plate or on the table, then interacting with it with a utensil or helping prepare the food. We will then progress to smelling the food, then touching it, then tasting it, then fully eating it. We follow cues from the child in order to set the pace of this progression, and different foods often follow different progressions because we all have our own preferences. You can find out more information about the SOS approach to feeding at sosapproachtofeeding.com. And that's all the time we have for the Arizona Daily Sun. For Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff, I'm volunteer reader Lisa Cantor-Ganey. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.